There's hope, there's help. Your host for the show is Lisa Seif, who is a practicing professional counselor and adjunct professor at USI. Lisa invites you to pick up the phone and give her a call at 424-1400 or 1-888-846-7867. We hope you enjoy today's program. And now, Radio Rehab.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Radio Rehab, where we're always excited on Saturdays to interview and talk to people that know a lot about the human condition, especially substance abuse issues and co-occurring disorders. So welcome back. Again, if you have any questions of our guests today, don't hesitate to call. We want this to be an answer to some of your concerns and some of your questions about how we can make the people we love's lives better and the community a better place. Without going into too much, I just have to tell you, our guest today has been a friend of Radio Rehab for a few years. John Polson is not only an expert on many fronts, but passionate and real about the way he sees human beings that are hurting, that have drug and alcohol conditions and other things, depression, bipolar. He teaches, he's a professor at Ivy Tech Community College now, and if you talk to any of his students, they just love learning from him. Prior to that, he did private counseling and psychotherapy with Southwest Behavioral Health, so he's been around the community on many committees and dedicated to teaching us about the human being and what helps us tick. He knows a lot about substance abuse and worked a lot with drug and alcohol addicted folks, and we've had a lot of discussions about that as we scratch our heads and try to figure out why do people self-destruct. I don't know, God knows and he ain't telling, but I know John's done a lot of studying on all the corners of that and wants to share with us today some things he's learned and some things he believes might be at the root of a lot of our issues. So he's going to talk to us today specifically about guilt and shame. But we want to say hello and thank you to Denise Greenwell from Brentwood Meadows, who met with Darren and I last week. We had a great lunch. Brentwood's definitely committed to being a community resource for folks, especially dealing with these kind of issues. So hi, Denise. Okay, I think I'm going to let John talk to us about what he's learned, what he knows. This will be a great interview. Don't hesitate to call and let us know what you want us to talk about, because we've got an expert here for an hour and we want to use him. John, thanks for always taking your free time to come and talk to us and share with us the things you've learned along the road.
Well, Lisa, it's a gift to be back here on Radio Rehab and to be with the listeners once again.
Yeah, thank you. So we've talked, and guilt and shame does seem to be a root of a lot of addictive disorders. And
it is. I mean, and both with addictions and with most psychiatric conditions. And in fact, if somebody were to ask me what seems to be the most destructive dynamic that I've run across in providing psychotherapy and working with people that are suffering, I think it would be this. It's this propensity towards guilt and shame that at first feels necessary and productive, but when you look at it, ends up being very destructive. And so, I mean, a couple terms that I want to use that many people define very differently, but is a sense of when we're looking at our experience, and by experience I mean our sense of what we think and feel, to validate our experience in a way is to say that our experience fits, that it matters, you know, that it has importance. You know, that if it's valid, then it's at least understandable given the details and circumstances. And so to invalidate it is to say that our experience doesn't fit, that it doesn't matter, that it's not important, that it's not understandable. And this sense of invalidation is a very toxic force, because what it does is it creates a sense of, to put the language I put on it, is that somehow then what I'm thinking or feeling is bad and wrong. And what that implies is that I'm bad, wrong, or broken for thinking and feeling it. So we become the object of our own contempt. So there's a sense of our experience is automatically rejected. We have an aversion to it. And then we tend to punish ourselves for even thinking and feeling that way. Mm-hmm. And so two questions that to me come up are, where does that come from and why? And if we look at where it comes from, I think a lot of it goes back to culture, including family culture, that cultures in generals and families specifically is where we start to learn the lessons of what's appropriate, inappropriate, how we should think, feel, and react, how we shouldn't. And so what happens is as we're growing up, certain experiences, certain thoughts, certain feelings are punished, or we're scolded for having them or expressing them a certain way. Mm-hmm. And then over time, the more that happens is eventually we just begin to do that to ourselves, so that we become the critical voice in our own head saying that our experience is bad and wrong. Then we can ask, well, why would we do that? And I think that part of what drives that is there is a part of us and of just society that believes that doing so is necessary and productive, that somehow you have to goad people. You have to guilt them to get them to a sense of getting angry so they'll act. Because anger is a very motivating force. Mm-hmm. You know, you can get people angry enough and shame them enough to finally they'll just act. Okay, I'm going to go take care of the thing now. You know, mm-hmm. It's a sense of doing that. So I think there's a part of us that believes that you have to get people angry to take care of stuff.
And you have to give them consequences for their bad behavior.
Right? Yeah. So a sense of that, if I get you angry enough, then you'll take care of things.
And you'll change.
Yeah. And so there's a sense of where that, you know, plays out, where I think that sometimes our society and people believe that if we don't treat people that way, then we're making them soft and that we're setting them up for failure and not being able to survive. Mm-hmm. And so to me, this comes across in the images that we have, sort of if we think about it from a sense of the some of the people that we celebrate, you know, are like leaders, like generals or drill sergeants, this sense of you have to insult people and tear them down to get them ready for battle. Or we see this now in our coaches, you know, the coaches that at times seem to be most celebrated are the ones that are hotheads, that yell at their players, that choke them, you know, that throw
Bobby
balls
Knight
at them.
Style.
Yeah, and most recently, the basketball coach who was fired from Rutgers.
Right.
You know, there's a part of us that actually seems to celebrate that because we think, oh yeah, that's how you
tough.
Get things done. And the unfortunate consequence of that is that, yes, anger is a very motivating emotion. If you break yourself down enough and shame yourself into doing something, sometimes you'll behave, but the consequence to our just sense of emotional health is devastating. So I think there's this sense of, well, anger is productive, shame's productive because it gets people to act certain ways, and it seems like it's the right thing to do. So I think we keep perpetuating this, but unfortunately, the consequence of this invalidation to our emotional health is just significant. And I always throw a challenge out to my students is that now, because a lot of times, the way that somebody thinks, feels, and acts, if we look at it, we might not agree with their interpretation of the circumstances. You know, we might not agree with how they're viewing things. But regardless, once a feeling is there, it's there. To somehow invalidate that, to shame that away, is basically saying, well, your feeling doesn't count and you shouldn't
right.
trust it.
Right.
So it's one of those deals where I have yet to find a thought or a feeling that in some context doesn't make sense. Doesn't necessarily mean it's the most accurate conclusion or the same conclusion I would come to if I was looking at it, but based on the context of the person, their beliefs, their history, their experience of the situation, it's understandable.
Yeah.
And so it's one of those deals where to convey to people that what they think and feel is bad or wrong just doesn't end up being very fair, in my view. And then that's what breeds that sense of self-destructive talk towards ourselves. That I have yet to find a thought or a feeling that in some regards doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Doesn't make it the most productive one, doesn't make it the most accurate one, but it's what is there at the moment.
Right.
And so for us to deny our experience of trying to push it away, it's going to push back. You know, it's almost like trying to push down a building with our bare hands, is that it's not going to happen. It's only going to resist all the more.
Sure, and then they come in our offices depressed and feeling like they're going crazy because their feelings maybe had been so turned upside down or told that they shouldn't feel that way or it's not right to feel that way. So.
Which unfortunately creates a blanket over the issues that are causing them difficulty. There's a lot of dynamics there, especially when people are coming in to look at their thoughts, feelings, and their behaviors and how to deal with them. But this sense of toxic shame and guilt makes it hard to look at those because now it's hard to look at the actual choices and behaviors because what we're caught up in is the sense of bad me.
Yeah.
You know, bad me. We can't look at the choices.
So, John, do you think with substance abuse, especially drugs and alcohol, one of the reasons so many people might struggle to stay clean is once they take the drug and the drink away, they're back to dealing with a lot of that, I'm bad, I'm flawed, I'm wrong?
Most definitely.
Yeah.
And it can even get in the way of recovery efforts. I mean, for an example, something we talked about in a previous show was looking at the way that people respond to a return to use or a relapse. And then all of a sudden is that if that kicks up this script of, wow, look at this. I'm the type of person that can't stay sober. I must not want this. I must not be capable of it.
So, failure. Yeah.
So what's
the
point?
Heck?
And
yeah.
Go back to it. Well, then unfortunately is that creates a blanket over looking at, all right, let's explore. Let's look at the issues that led to the return to use. Let's look at the dynamics. It's harder to look at those if you're caught up in the, I'm a bad, broken person that's not capable of change. So this sense of toxic shame and guilt often impedes actually looking at the issues that are going to need to be addressed.
Yeah. Don't go away, Radio Rehab. We've got to take a quick break and let our sponsors have a moment on the air. We will be right back with John Paulson.
It's a proven fact that 1 in 3 adults will be affected by a mental health or substance abuse issue. Think about that. 1 in 3. Think about your family, your friends. If you or someone you care about is suffering from depression, anxiety, anger, or any type of chemical dependency, including alcohol, Brentwood Meadows can help. Left untreated, these conditions can lead to pain and suffering that destroys lives. Help yourself or a loved one today. Call Brentwood Meadows to schedule a free evaluation at 858-7200. Phones are answered 24 hours a day.
During the spring into summer savings event at Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville, get queen beds for only $277, a five-piece dining room for only $427, and sofas at the Ashley direct price of $397. Save throughout the store, plus get 0% interest for 18 months. Now's the time to get the mattress of your dreams. Don't miss huge savings on Ashley Sleep, Simmons, Stearns & Foster, and Tempur-Pedic. At Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville, some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Mother's Day is this Sunday, and Wangari's Cards and Books is here to help you honor that special woman in your life. Choose from an assortment of special African-American Mother's Day cards and one-of-a-kind gifts. Stop by and see us at 605 South Evans Avenue. We're open Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. until 6 p.m. and from 10 a.m. until 5 p.m. on Saturdays. Or give us a call at 812-426-7993. Wangari's Cards and Books, your one-stop shopping place.
Tune in every Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. for the Sunday Evening Gospel Show, hosted by Byron Lander. Byron plays your favorite traditional and contemporary gospel music while providing you with inspirational thoughts and messages that will bless your soul. You can call in your musical and prayer requests at 424-1400 or 1-888-846-7867. The Sunday Evening Gospel Show is always found right here on Magic 98.5 FM and 1400 AM. You're listening to Radio Rehab on 1400 AM and Magic 98.5 FM, WEOA. We encourage you to call into this live program at 812-424-1400 or 1-888-846-7867. You can also listen on the World Wide Web at 1400 AM, WEOA.com. We thank our guests for coming in today. And now, back to Radio Rehab.
Welcome back. We're talking to John Paulson about guilt and shame and just the root of a lot of people in recovery and a lot of other co-occurring disorders and what may impede us from making progress in our recovery. And before break, John, you were just talking about that toxic shame, that oftentimes the return to drug, the return to drink is about that.
Yeah, and a lot of that ties to the way that we see ourselves and have learned to see ourselves and some of the natural tendencies of how we view ourselves. Social psychologists have identified a dynamic where the fancy term for it is the fundamental attribution error. And so what an attribution is it's the way that we explain something, the way we make sense of it. And here's the basics of how this breaks down, is that all of a sudden, if we look at the behavior of others, is that our tendency, our general attribution error, is that we automatically attribute their behavior to what's called internal constitutional circumstances. So what that means is their behavior is something about their inherent quality, sort of who they are, is a sense of they would be that kind of person. Is that so? We look at their behavior as being very driven by a sense of internal identity, you know, a sense of internal volition and choice. So that all of a sudden is that if I was being silly and running across the park, is that somebody might say, he's crazy. You know, if we look at that kind of, he is crazy. Mm-hmm. Well, crazy is something about me, about my identity, about who I am. It's sort of something that is stuck in me. Where they say that in general, when we look at our own behavior, our attribution error tendency is to attribute our behavior to circumstance. Well, that we can explain it. We say, well, this happened, or I was this way because of, you know, and we give ourselves more credit for the impact of the situation. I think that my experience has shown that when especially it comes to regular emotional suffering, like with psychological disorders and addiction, is that that attribution error gets flipped. That when it comes to looking at ourselves, is that we automatically sort of explain it from this sense of an internal attribution. It's a sense of, I'm this way, I'm just always going to be this way, I'm broken. And so...
Can that ever change?
I think it can. I mean, it's easier said than done, and doing is the hard work. But it's one of those deals where it developed. Mm-hmm. So anything that can be developed can be changed. Mm-hmm. Now, many paths are well worn, so it's not a very quick change, but I think that it can be changed if we start to become aware of it, sensitive to it, and then we identify some type of a way to try to do something different, and then we continue to try to do something different, and whenever we don't always do well with that, and we fall back to the old path, then we just have to start again.
Yeah.
But it is very hard. It's this sense of, well, you know, and you can hear it in language, and it's interesting to hear is that we talk about, could you believe they would be that kind of person? Mm-hmm. You know, that automatically when we say that, that's implying that they have some type of a fixed, flaw, unchangeable mm-hmm. identity. And mm-hmm. if we really look at it, is that for any of us, I mean, circumstances have a big impact on how we choose and how we act. And when we fail to give that credit, is that we basically turn ourselves into this fixed statue, which is, I'm this way, I am unchanging, and there's not much of a way back from that.
Yeah.
But if we are able to acknowledge that the way that we see ourselves and the way that we move through life is something that we can impact and do different, then it creates a crack in the door. And that's one of the beauties of both treatment and 12-step recovery, like the gift of Alcoholics Anonymous mm-hmm. and Narcotics Anonymous and all the other 12-step groups, is that they provide a platform from which to look at that. And then they provide a community, a tribe of people that are trying to help with that.
Yeah.
So it's one of those deals that,
it's a win-win for sure.
Yeah. So it can change, but it is very difficult to change because those roots go very deep into our past and our identity.
Yes. And then if you relapse, sometimes people think, I don't deserve to go back to AA. I can't go back again and pick up another chip, or I don't want to go and acknowledge my relapse. Mm-hmm. So then there's that shame and guilt about getting sober. It's easier to drink and cover it all up than to get sober and deal with that again.
You're right. And it reminds me of, there's an older video that I used to show in treatment groups on this issue of shame and guilt from a very prominent addictions therapist named John Bradshaw. Mm. And he talked about that and trying to correct our interpretations of predicting how people would treat us. And he goes, the first recovery meeting I ever went to, I told them my worst stuff and they all gave me their phone number.
Right.
So it's that sense of this is not just with substance use and addictions, but it's with all conditions and just with us as people, is that we often make predictions or assumptions about how things will go, how others will treat us, how we'll do, and what it means if we don't do well. So we have this script in our head that says, I couldn't possibly go do that because if I do, I'll fail, I'll look horrible, and then people are going to laugh at me.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the response to that is avoidance. We just don't go do those things or put them in that situation. And it's always a gift whenever people still, despite those thoughts, put themselves in the situation, and then all of a sudden their lived experience shows that those initial assumptions and predictions weren't accurate like they thought they would be. And in fact, it shows that people are more capable than what they would give themselves credit for. That's an important lesson. You show up to a recovery meeting and you go, I relapsed. Is that, my plan didn't go well. And then the people go, guess what? That often happens. Let's find a way back. So instead of breaking people down, is that they try to give them support to build them back up.
Right.
But that important lesson of acknowledging whenever we have not been as successful as we want. You know, that sense of the reason why I think it's tough sometimes for people to accept a sense of responsibility or recognition of their choices is because of this sense of if I do, then that means I'm a bad person. Mm-hmm. If we can just say, I messed up.
Yeah.
I messed up. And we don't minimize that, but we also don't overgeneralize it to a sense of being a bad person. I messed up, so let me look at starting again.
I love what Pat Rhodes says. He always says he owes everything he is to failure.
Yeah.
He learned from them and was welcomed back in and took advantage of that. This is going out on a limb, John, and it might be a interesting question to ask you, but in some ways, do our religious institutions breed shame in the psyche soul in a way? Not all, and I don't mean to generalize, but do you think a lot? You were saying, where do we get it from? The cultures. Religion can play a big role in the culture and how we form beliefs about ourselves. Some religions are very shaming, it seems like. Some religions, if you're angry, it's a sin.
Yeah. I think, or that they definitely can be, or here's the way I would say it, is that our wisdom traditions, our religions are like a Rorschach test. A Rorschach test are these ambiguous ink blots on a piece of paper, and the person is asked to say, what do you see in there? Mm-hmm. Or when That's we look true. Up in the sky, as author Alan Watts used to say, and we see constellations. Well, the constellations aren't there. They're just stars, but the constellation is how they're grouped in the mind's eye. So I do think that certain people or traditions looking at certain teachings do interpret them in a way that contributes more to shame and guilt. Mm-hmm. So I think I would caveat it by saying is that I don't necessarily think that like you said, the general swoop of that religion breeds this, because we see the exact opposite, is that we see incredible examples in the wisdom traditions of people that model this sense of forgivingness, compassion, including compassion towards self, you know, a sense of nonviolence towards others and towards ourselves. So it's there. So it's like in that whole body of wisdom teachings, you can find either thing depending upon what you look at and how you interpret it. Mm-hmm. But yes, I do think that historically certain interpretations of of wisdom teachings have supported this sense of shame and guilt.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was a good answer, definitely, because, you know, I do see being in the rooms of AA a lot of people that have a lot of guilt and shame because they just don't feel they even deserve God's love for the way they live their life. And I think, like you said, that interpretation's the key, and there's forgiveness everywhere in those mm-hmm. teachings.
And that what we often forget, and this is something that is now coming into psychological science, is that, you know, a lot of these concepts and these terms that have always been ambiguous, or they've seemed too spiritual to be part of medicine or science, they're coming in. Mm-hmm. Is that we start to see a lot of information here now in the psychological literature on forgiveness, mm-hmm. you know, and actually looking at approaches for promoting that, a sense of forgiveness towards others and forgiveness towards self, mm-hmm. Practices that have always been traditionally more spiritual based, such as cultivating loving kindness for others. Now, all of a sudden, they're parts of psychotherapies,
right.
Because what we forget is that forgiveness, just like any other behavior, is a practice skill. It's something that we have to do, something that we can get better at. It's not an either or. Mm-hmm. It's not either I can do it or I completely can't. So just like a sense of compassion is that traditions that try to cultivate that. It's not mm-hmm. either that I am completely and always compassionate or I can't do it.
Right, right.
So it's a sense of looking at forgiveness. When we talk about forgiveness, forgiveness is an action. It's something that we have to do, which implies it's something that we have to work on and something that we have to develop. And so a lot of times I think people paint themselves into a corner that way, which is they mm-hmm. assume that in order to do something, they should just be able to do it, just be able to do it perfectly mm-hmm. and have to be able to do it right now. Well, that's an unfair expectation, because a lot of these things take technique, they take work, they take patience, because mm-hmm. we're not going to always do it 100% right. But if we set up that dichotomy of either I can do it or I'm a failure, that doesn't leave much room
right.
for development and practice.
Fascinating, yes, and that it's a skill to learn and to watch. Yeah, don't go away, Radio Rehab. We're talking to John Paulson about forgiveness, shame, guilt, and all those other things. We'll be right back.
Our country was stricken by horrific tragedies in 2012. This has brought the topic of mental health to the forefront of all of our minds. It is so important for our community to recognize and guide our loved ones to seek help. Please, please call Brentwood Meadows if you know someone who may be suffering from a mental health issue. It could be depression, anxiety, or even loneliness. These people need our help. Call Brentwood Meadows today at 858-7200. There's hope. There's help. That's 858-7200.
During the spring into summer savings event at Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville, get queen beds for only $277, a five-piece dining room for only $427, and sofas at the Ashley direct price of $397. Save throughout the store, plus get 0% interest for 18 months. Now's the time to get the mattress of your dreams. Don't miss huge savings on Ashley Sleep, Simmons, Stearns & Foster, and Tempur-Pedic. At Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Listen Monday through Friday at 7:45 a.m. for your Live Smart Tip of the Day, sponsored by Vectren. There are dozens of free and low-cost ways to help manage your energy bills this spring, and these weekly tips will help start you off on the right track. To manage your account or to learn about Vectren rebates and other conservation tips, log on to Vectren.com. And don't forget to dial 811 before you dig. Your Live Smart Tip of the Day is heard every weekday on 1400 a.m. and the new Magic 98.5 FM.
Now, we put up with a lot of things.
Oh, don't I know it.
We take the good.
With the bad. We give up me time.
For we time.
And we even put up with that Oxy detergent that doesn't do enough for the scent.
Oh, I don't put up with that.
You don't put up with it?
Oh, no, I don't. I've got Gain with Oxy Boost. It's got a spectacular clean and a long-lasting scent.
Just one dose of Gain with Oxy Boost gives you more freshness than an entire 45-ounce bottle of the leading detergent with Oxy. Get amazing freshness from Gain. Get Gain today. There's more to Gain.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ashley. I'm a dentist, and for some reason, people don't like to visit me. And I sort of get it. So here's what you can do to make your visits more pleasant for both of us. try Crest Pro Health products. With regular use, they do wonders for those areas we dentists check most, like plaque, tartar, and gingivitis. So go ahead, give Crest Pro Health a try. The better you are to your mouth, the better I am to you. There's good oral health, and then there's Pro Health. Go Pro.
Hi, this is Mike Reagan. Folks ask me, what would Ronald Reagan do if he were with us today? I believe the first thing he'd do is stop Obamacare. Already it's in effect, with higher taxes, hidden fees, skyrocketing insurance rates, big Medicare cuts, and some insurance plans are hit with a 40% tax. Protect yourself by getting the Obamacare Survival Guide. It's already a number one New York Times bestseller. Newsmax says it's the best guide to the new law, giving you the strategies, tips, and loopholes you need to know. If you're insured on Medicare, a business owner, a medical professional, just about anyone, you need this book. Get the number one bestseller, the Obamacare Survival Guide, at bookstores everywhere. Or get our special $4.95 offer and save $15 off the cover price by going now to Obamacare911.com. Obamacare911.com. That's Obamacare911.com.
Welcome back to Radio Rehab on 1400 AM and Magic 98.5 FM WEOA. Phone lines are always open to share your live comments, so give us a call right now at 812-424-1400 or 1-888-846-7867. And now, back to Radio Rehab.
Welcome back. We're back talking to John Paulson about guilt and shame and a lot of other things, and he's going to now give us some, on the way out of the show, some good points to take with us to help us with these issues.
Yeah, and so, I mean, a lot of people would ask, okay, so what do you do about this? And the unfortunate part of any answer to that is there's no quick, straightforward answer, which we like, you know, which we would like an answer that says, we'll just do A, B, and C, and then everything will be all right. And unfortunately, nobody's got that. But what I would like to suggest are some guiding principles of how we approach this, this sense of shame and guilt and working with it and trying not to allow it to breed in a toxic way. And so part of that is that we have to make it a priority, is that in order to actually work on something, it has to be something that registers on our radar screen that we want to do something about. We then have to come up with some type of a plan. How are we going to try to approach it? What technologies, what techniques are we going to try to practice, and especially around what type of a supportive community? And then we have to realize that it's practice. It's something that we have to develop. And we have to do that then through a sense of persistence, which is doing it again and again and again. And then also cultivating a sense of patience, because just like with any action, it's not always going to go completely as planned. It's not always going to go effortlessly. It's going to take a sense of time. And it's also going to take, like you said earlier, a sense of, I'm not going to call it failure, it's going to take a sense of things not going as well as we had hoped. Because no matter what, anytime you're trying to institute change, it's not going to go perfect. There are going to be times that we're going to lose our priority to work on it. We're going to drift back into old patterns, old behaviors. We're just going to do that. And so the practice becomes, how do we catch ourselves when we do that and then bring ourselves back, you know, to recommit again and again? So I think with this sense of shame, it's a matter of coming to an awareness of it, trying to look at some approaches or technologies for how we try to cultivate a sense of forgiveness, and then looking at acting. How do I do different, and how do I care for self different? So, you know, these things are, you know, there's not a sense of here's the two things to do. It's a sense of really having to try to figure this out for ourselves. But, you know, just for now, an example is that, like, we see this basic model working in 12-step recovery, which is a sense of creating a supportive and accepting community where people are cultivated at looking at trying to figure out ways to do things different, to acknowledging attributes about themselves that they don't think have served them the best, such as whenever people are developing the inventory, working on a sense of making amends when possible, that's not going to create a further sense of harm, even in the step 11, cultivating a sense of meditation and prayer. Mm-hmm. So 12-step recovery provides one model for how to try to do this. And there's lots of other models out there too. There's different forms of psychotherapy. There's even different forms of spiritual support as groups or communities. So it's really about, how do I recognize this and make this a priority? How do I plan on trying to address it? How do I practice, and knowing that that takes a sense of persistence and patience, that I shouldn't expect myself to get this right away, to get it perfect. It's almost more important to have a way back, is that things are not going to go as planned, and I have to find a way to come back again and again.
So it's a process.
It is. And I think as part of that, here's the, our normal tendency is we want to know like the approach, this is the thing that will work. It will work for everyone.
The Weight Watchers for shame and guilt.
That's right. And unfortunately it's not, is that, it's important that we try to find what resonates with us and what's going to work with us. So it's not a matter of everyone has to go do A.
Right.
It's a matter of finding what is going to best serve and work for me. And part of that is we have to cultivate a sense of playfulness in going and looking, trying things out. Is that we might not know that something isn't necessarily going to best serve us until we go give it a shot. But normally what happens is if we go and try something and if it doesn't go well, then we go, oh, there's nothing out there and I'm not capable of change. And we overgeneralize. So yeah. If you go and find something that works, that's great. If something doesn't, then okay, now we have something on the list that we know probably isn't for us and we move on. It's the same thing like with self-care. For an example, there is no list of the 7 things that help us to deal with stress. Some people like working in their yard. Like one of my neighbors, I think that is one of his number one stress outlets. Mm-hmm. And it must bother him when he can look at my yard, because the only reason my grass gets cut is because I don't want critters growing in it, So I do not get any relief or joy out of tending to the yard. That is not on my list of stress management. But it might be on his. And if so, that's great. Something doesn't have to be applicable to everyone. So,
it's true.
But if we paint ourselves into that corner again of saying, well, we have to find the right things, or that these are the things that work for all people always, then we're not being very fair to our humanity. And so we have to cultivate that openness to say, well, let me go try stuff. Let me see whether or not it resonates with me. And that takes a sense of patience and courage, and that's difficult. But
and then
I think
letting others have that same dignity of.
So it is. I wish anybody had the quick equation that says do A, B, and C, and it'll take out. But it's really more about becoming aware of this, making it a priority, and then trying to figure out something that I can bring to it that's going to help me not go down these old paths.
Well, and I like that you said earlier too, these concepts of love and forgiveness that can help us with shame and guilt have to start with ourselves too. We have to not be violent with ourselves. We have to be loving to ourselves. That's a foreign concept to people, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
To be good to ourselves.
And for a lot of different reasons and for a lot of different dynamics is that we are world-class experts in treating ourselves horribly. That's unfortunate. I think it goes back to a lot of the dynamics that we talked about earlier. And so part of the practice is looking at it and saying, so these very rigid and negative attitudes that I hold towards myself, how do these truly help me? How do these truly serve me? And it's important that we explore those, because I think that if we honestly do it, we will often find that more times than not, they do not serve us as well as we had hoped. Now, they're understandable that they come up. So again, now we don't want to shame the shame. We don't want to say, oh, I'm having shame, and so that means I'm bad. Is that, to have these negative thoughts come up about ourselves, is that's very understandable. So if we see them, it's almost like we can go, Oh, yeah, because that's what people do. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, look, I'm being critical of myself again, because that's just our human tendency. Mm-hmm. So then and now it's not about me and my flaws and my failures and my brokenness. It's like a sense of that we can normalize our experience, which means that we see it as very understandable and typical. And so that when you look at certain reactions or thoughts, you know, it's easy to sort of then, instead of reacting to them in a very closed down and critical way, you can almost look at them in a humorous way to go, hey, there's a human being again. Mm-hmm. You know, there's me doing what, you know, we do best.
Yeah, so give that yourself permission to be human.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, in some ways it sounds like so much work in the beginning. Like it is a Weight Watchers type way of going after this thing. You have to give it your best and have a plan, as you said, and practice it. For a lot of people, that may seem like such a big order.
Oh, it is, because that's with any significant change is just a sense of at first it is very challenging. It's very difficult because we have gotten familiar with and comfortable with our established patterns. And so anytime you go to change that takes a significant amount of effort to turn the ship in a different direction.
So
that's why early on it's important for people to really identify with that sense of priority, because part of that is looking at reminding themselves of, why is this important to me? Why is it that I want to put in this time and effort? You know, what am I hoping to accomplish? Because the better that we can stay aware of our motivations, then it helps us to stay more on course whenever the waters are choppy. Mm-hmm. So it is that early on is that we have to cultivate that sense of priority and motivation, because it's not going to go well. But those can be sort of a guiding light that keeps us on the course. But then, because at the end of the day, the payoff is that even though it takes a lot of effort to turn the ship around, is that once you do, it's smoother sailing. Mm-hmm. Not perfect, but smoother. So that over time, these become our new habits. These become our new way of approaching things. And it doesn't take the same amount of effort and intentional time that it did early on.
Right. Yeah, I think a lot of people just want to be struck sober. Easy going, and it does take work. Mm-hmm. Don't go away, Radio Rehab. We're talking to John Paulson about guilt and shame. We'll be right back.
It's a proven fact that 1 in 3 adults will be affected by a mental health or substance abuse issue. Think about that. 1 in 3. Think about your family, your friends. If you or someone you care about is suffering from depression, anxiety, anger, or any type of chemical dependency, including alcohol, Brentwood Meadows can help. Left untreated, these conditions can lead to pain and suffering that destroys lives. Help yourself or a loved one today. Call Brentwood Meadows to schedule a free evaluation at 858-7200. Phones are answered 24 hours a day.
During the spring into summer savings event at Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville, get queen beds for only $277, a five-piece dining room for only $427, and sofas at the Ashley direct price of $397. Save throughout the store, plus get 0% interest for 18 months. Now's the time to get the mattress of your dreams. Don't miss huge savings on Ashley Sleep, Simmons, Stearns & Foster, and Tempur-Pedic. At Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville, some exclusions apply. See store for details.
No one knows how to keep your Buick at its best like the certified service experts at your Buick dealer. They'll take care of your Buick so you can enjoy the ride. Visit BuickCertifiedService.com for their latest service offers and everyday value pricing.
You wanted it, you got it. Big Easy Click deals are back at Lumber Liquidators Easy Click Flooring Sale. Save up to 48% versus comparable floors at big box stores. Get big coupon savings and save up to 33% off our best laminates. Up to 22% off Easy Click Hardwood. Up to 26% off Easy Click Vinyl Wood Plank. Plus special financing. Easy to install, easy to finance, easy to save. It just clicks. Easy Click Flooring Sale is going on now, so get to LumberLiquidators.com or your local store today.
Now, we put up with a lot of things.
Oh, don't I know it.
We take the good.
With the bad. We give up me time.
For we time.
And we even put up with that Oxy detergent that doesn't do enough for the scent.
Oh, I don't put up with that.
You don't put up with it?
Oh, no, I don't. I've got Gain with Oxy Boost. It's got a spectacular clean and a long-lasting scent.
Just one dose of Gain with Oxy Boost gives you more freshness than an entire 45-ounce bottle of the leading detergent with Oxy. Get amazing freshness from Gain. Get Gain today. There's more to gain.
Hi, I'm Dr. Ashley. I'm a dentist, and for some reason, people don't like to visit me. And I sort of get it. So here's what you can do to make your visits more pleasant for both of us. Try Crest Pro Health products. With regular use, they do wonders for those areas we dentists check most, like plaque, tartar, and gingivitis. So go ahead, give Crest Pro Health a try. The better you are to your mouth, the better I am to you. There's good oral health, and then there's Pro Health. Go Pro!
Welcome back to Radio Rehab on 1400 AM and Magic 98.5 FM WEOA. Phone lines are always open to share your live comments, so give us a call right now at 812-424-1400 or 1-888-846-7867. And now, back to Radio Rehab.
So, John, where do we go from here?
Well, you know, we were talking about different priorities to cultivate in approaching this, you know, knowing that there unfortunately is not a sense of do A, B, and C. It's more about how we approach it. And we were talking about how it's realizing that that takes time, effort, and practice. Is it something I've noticed in life, in my own life, in other people's lives, and especially in having the privilege of talking to people in psychotherapy, is that one of our natural tendencies is what I call the fallacy of passive spontaneous recovery. And what I mean is that we all want to have things change. We want them to change right now, and we want them to be able to change without making any effort. So it's a sense of if we could click our fingers that all of a sudden things would be different and with minimal effort. And unfortunately, in working with dynamics like addiction, in working with dynamics like other psychological disorders, unfortunately, it's not a matter of that passive spontaneous recovery, is that it takes that sense of work and practice. And so we talked about that sense of how to approach it with a sense of having the priority to work on it, coming up with a plan, realizing it takes practice, that practice has to be with a sense of persistence, and then we have to extend a sense of patience towards ourselves and our practice, knowing that it's not always going to go perfect, it's not always going to be met with success. And we were talking a few minutes ago about another P word that we could add to that list of P words, which is a sense of prayer, which is the importance of cultivating a sense of intentional time where we are reflecting on hopefulness, meaningfulness, and purpose, and how that can be something that also supports that whole process.
And I prayer does connect you to a sense of that meditative, purposeful, what am I doing in this world to begin with kind of thing.
Yeah.
Prayer does connect us to that in a good way, I think.
Yes, because more and more, like we talked about, is that what they find is that you have to, there's again sort of a whole emphasis in the recent sort of research and especially in the development of some psychotherapeutic approaches on spending a lot of time talking about people's values, you know, their values, what's important to them, because the more that you can connect change efforts to someone's values, then it's going to actually support their success. That if I just give you something to do or a goal, and you don't see it as important or purposeful or really tied to what you want to accomplish, you're not going to do it. And so that's one of the problems that we psychotherapists get in trouble with. We have a lot of different systems for how to look at problems, and those systems tell us, well, here are the things people should work on, and we tell people to work on them, and they don't make sense to people. They don't seem connected to their immediate needs and struggle, so then they don't do it, and then therapists get upset and say that people are non-compliant. Well, they're not non-compliant. Just give me a rationale for what purpose is this serving. And so just like with a sense of recovery, the more that I can tap into, not just a matter of not drinking, but a matter of I'm not drinking because is that I want to be more present with my children, that I want to be healthier, you know, that I, you know, the more that we can connect it to that, then it makes it easier. Just like the sense of, a lot of times with anxiety disorders, the main treatment that's used is what's called exposure therapy. What sustains anxiety is all of a sudden I approach something that generates anxiety, my anxiety raises, and then I escape. I get away from it. And unfortunately, that makes it more likely we'll do the same avoidance in the future. So part of exposure therapy is facing what raises the anxiety and not avoiding. Mm-hmm. But staying with things that bring up fear and anxiety is very difficult. Yeah. And if you can't give people a reason why to do that, then who in the world would want to do it?
Right.
So part of what prayer can do is that, since it ties us, like the mooring lines of a boat, to a sense of what's important to us, where our priorities are, mm-hmm. what we value, is that it can nurture and cultivate that whole process.
Mm-hmm. Beautifully said. So in closing, with this guilt and shame and just the things you've learned over the years, what do you think if somebody is struggling to get clean and sober, or struggling with anxiety or fear of change, would be a first line or first plan that they could go to? And do you think somebody can do it in isolation, or do you think people need other people to come out of that?
I think one of the first things that is beneficial for us to do is to actually be in the presence of someone else or of others that are going to help us to hear a different message, and that is going to model that view. Mm-hmm. Because left alone, it is possible to change, but it's more difficult because our script is always going to take us back to what's the most practice. And so at times it can be, and sort of a fancier term for this is called a corrective emotional experience, where I all of a sudden have a new relationship with somebody and they don't treat me the way that other people have before. They don't sustain those old patterns of invalidation. They express a sense of regard and dignity towards me and a sense of openness. And then I start to see that it's possible to have those relationships, mm-hmm. and that others can have those views of me, instead of thinking everyone thinks I'm bad, broken. And so I do think that it is very beneficial, however people can find it, to find someone or someones who can start to engage them in that way, and then can start to model that sense of forgiveness, that it's okay to be imperfect, because maybe we haven't always had that. Maybe we had parents that modeled this sense of parental infallibility. Mm-hmm. And so we never saw them practicing a sense of, wow, I messed up. Mm-hmm. So we don't get the idea that that is part of human nature, like we said earlier. So I think that although we do have to do work in our own life, in our own hearts, in our own heads, you know, which is away from others, I think that trying to find others, or some type of a community that's going to encourage and support that, is almost vital. And so that could be a sense of a 12-step group. It could be a sense of a faith community. It could be a sense of relationships that we have with certain relatives or with certain friends, or it might be getting involved in other sort of purposeful or intentional groups that focus on a sense of psychological well-being, or it could be in treatment. But it is harder to do it when you don't have supporters and people cheering you on.
And what a perfect way to close, because it's Mother's Day. And for all the mothers that want so desperately to validate their children.
And it is. And actually, in certain spiritual approaches, actually, a mother's love is used as the model for cultivating compassion, because it's this unconditional sense of love and commitment to safeguarding. And so it's like trying to cultivate the sense of, if I could treat every other human being as a mother would treat a child, then that becomes a great model for cultivating compassion. So yeah, especially since tomorrow is Mother's Day, it's a sense of blessings to all mothers and what they offer the world.
yes. Thank you so much, John. What a great way to close. Remember, again, love thy neighbor as thyself. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers that gave birth to children and all the mothers out there that didn't give birth, but take on that motherly love and responsibility to their neighbors and to each other. So until next week, John, will you come back?
I will look forward to the privilege of coming back at some point in the future, please.
Yes, I would love for you to come back again and talk about motivational interviewing and stages of change. Be awesome. So everybody, don't forget between now and next week to do the next right thing.
Thank you for tuning in to Radio Rehab, and what an awesome show today was. Once again, we want to thank our guests and host for donating their time to this program of recovery. Radio Rehab is only a support to the real work of recovery and does not offer definitive answers or attempt to counsel anyone in their own personal behavior. Although the show does not endorse any program of recovery, it holds the belief that most recovery works are in an effort of true conviction and concern for the benefit of the suffering and can be trusted to offer real hope and better choices. Radio Rehab airs every Saturday morning from 10 until 11 on 1400 AM and Magic 98.5 FM WEOA and at 1400 AM WEOA.com.